explanation or comments. Let me draw your attention. I'm going to speed ahead and I'll go back to chart number 8. And explaining this chart, you indicated, I believe this information, sort of the loophole of whatever was brought to the attention of the state by the industry. As I recall in your presentation, you indicated that you were a legislative staffer about that time, and when this system or this proposition was somewhat put forth, it was considered to be to have some problems, but it was felt that those were theoretical problems and basically not of any real consequences. And then we come back later and we see, yes, based upon the state's work at that time, that we've made an error. And as a result, it appears that the companies were paying no severance tax or production tax. Let me ask you now, as I understand the equation, if the companies did not pay the production tax, hopefully they generated a larger amount of net profit, of which they should have paid a greater percentage or a greater amount of profit tax. Can you share with the committee, based upon this scenario, what was the profit tax paid by the companies as a result of not paying a production or service tax at that, based upon your chart number 8?
Well, you're quite right that for every $100 of severance tax that we rebate them, if you will, they add $100 to their profits, and they have to pay taxes on those profits. But as we know, the oil companies are paying about 3% of that $100 that they took out of our pockets in severance tax as back into our pockets as income tax. So it's a big gain for them. For every $100 they would add to their income, they only, as a consequence of the subsidy, they gain $97 at least as so far as Alaska is concerned. Just really get about 3 to 4% effective income tax rate on their revenues.
So you now, in addition to the income taxes, we should have got the royalty share. We should have got the, I believe, the property tax also. So let me go take you back to chart number 4, if I may. You had indicated here, you made notes of the amount going to outside workers in the state of Alaska. Based upon the information used to develop this chart, can you share with the committee how much of this was contract employment, that is, through the drilling operation or whatever, and how much of this is direct labor hired specifically by management of the industry?
Well, I don't know the precise amounts, but those numbers break down to about 50-50. About half of that number is contract. You see under the next graph, it shows oil industry employment, and it's broken down into oil extraction, oil field services. Now, there's contractual employees and there's employees of oil companies in both of those categories, but by and large, oil field services tends to be pretty much much more dominated by contractual firms. And I'm sure that information could be obtained precisely from the Department of Labor if it was important.
In fact, I was going to ask you if by chance you had a copy of that, since you indicated you'd taken it from your information. Well, Mr. Chairman, what I'd like to place on the record here, Mr. Erickson has testified that about 50% was contract employees, and I indicated the drilling and whatever, and the other 50% was probably direct employees. Well, I think we're well aware that particularly in the drilling end, three of those companies, as I understand, are Alaskan-based companies owned primarily by the Native organization. So you're saying here that not only are the oil industry not enforcing Alaska hire, keeping the employment base here, you're saying that the Native corporations are doing the same thing?
No, sir, I'm not saying that.
Well, then, if it's 50-50, that tells me that we have some problems with those vendors, too. But let me go forth, or maybe Mr. Chairman.
Representative Furness, are you pursuing a similar kind of questioning that could... We have a couple of people who would like to leave, and I can come back to you if we can give those people an opportunity to
I've got just a couple more questions, Chairman. Okay.
Continue, Representative.
Okay. If I could draw Mr. Erickson's attention to the production, I don't see a number on this chart. chart. You made the comparison here that Nigeria, for example, returned to the state based upon 1.2 million barrels, some $6.2 billion. Do you have any idea what the average price of oil was selling for in Nigeria versus that of Alaska? And I'll ask the same question for Venezuela, United Kingdom, and Indonesia. And do you have any idea what the taxing structure was in these countries as in comparison to Alaska?
So the oil price was selling was, I'm sure, very closely tied to the world oil price, whatever discounts and chiseling might have been going on by the various OPEC countries at that time. The taxes clearly in Nigeria had to be pretty high, otherwise they wouldn't have been collecting nearly $14 a barrel. I'm not sure if I understand your question correctly.
Well, let's go on. My last question on this particular thing, why didn't you use any of the U.S. states, Oklahoma, California, Texas, why didn't you use those to make the similar kind of comparison?
Well, we have a different situation there, don't we? We have a lot of small fields, you know, and we don't have any large producers. We're much more like the United Kingdom, we're much more like Nigeria or Venezuela or Indonesia than we are in terms of the physical characteristics of the kinds of oil fields we produce. In terms of the ownership characteristics, in Texas, the oil production is owned by thousands, hundreds of thousands of small private operators. I think it is appropriate for this committee and any other committee of the legislature who looks at this legislation to compare our tax laws with the tax laws of any other state. And Mr. Marks has those comparisons available right now. He just did an analysis which showed that if this new ELF was adopted in Texas, in Oklahoma, and any other state in the country, there's only about three fields in the whole United States that would pay any taxes at all. One field in the whole United States that would pay any taxes at all. If you took our present law, there'd be no taxes paid either, I think, or very, very little taxes. So it's an appropriate thing to compare. However, these comparisons I took to countries that had large publicly owned oil, like just as we do.
One of the things I'd like to place on the record, Mr. Chairman, as I recall, when we look at the other states in the United States, as opposed to increasing the taxation, they have taken steps to reduce the taxation.
So are we in this bill.
I'm not so sure on that, but we won't discuss that. Mr. Chairman, I do have other questions, but let me just close with this. I think the question comes down to what is a fair share of the revenue and what is a fair share of the effort. The acknowledgement here is that we are in a capitalistic system, and my training tells me that it's driven by the profit motive, so I don't see that as anything terribly bad. In fact, Mr. Erickson, you closed, in fact, one of your statements was, if I was in their shoes, I would be looking for the same thing. And as an economist, I'm sure your training also says, in a different capacity, you would probably be looking at it in the same way. So for the record, Mr. Chairman, I want to just state here that while I appreciate Mr. Erickson's very spirited presentation, and I appreciate him placing on the records his certain biases, and I think that should be well known, it is a matter of pricing, it's a matter of the share of the revenue, and I think this legislative body, working within a capitalistic framework, must be considerate of the profit motive and the thing that keeps the production moving, the thing that creates the jobs, is that profit motive, and without that, we have no productivity, or very limited productivity. So I want to place that on record.
Thank you, Representative Furness. And to follow up with that comment, I just would like to add for the record myself that while we have a different kind of shareholder, a stockholder, if you will, we are all answerable to. I think it is important to keep in mind, while some of the oil industry stockholder share or dividends are going like this,
the stockholders or shareholders that we represent, our dividends are going like this. And I hope that the industry and any further testimony by the administration will give me an idea as to why I should consider that a fair thing and how it would affect long-term state financial situations. With that, I would like to continue on with Representative Hudson, who has another commitment. So, Representative Hudson, your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This whole dialogue and discussion that tries to get to the heart of fairness, Greg, is one of the things that I've been wrestling with since I'm new to this whole subject. And looking at your production schedules here, I guess what I would challenge or charge or ask is that when those oil companies, all of whom are represented, I'm sure, that are going to make presentations, come forward, that they'll also take a look at these things. And let's get apples and apples down together so that I can really see, you know, what other countries are making. Indonesia, for example, it's my understanding, reimburses oil companies for exploration out of their taxes. And I don't know if the others do it or not. I was in Nigeria, and I didn't even know they had oil over there at the time. I knew they had fish. But that kind of, you know, these are good. This is a good start. Now let's take this and really make it an apples and apples type of a discussion. Take a look at it and see if we are being fair or if we're even, you know, right to consider whether or not we're getting our fair share. Because I think that's an issue. You know, we do represent the taxpayers in Alaska. So I guess to those of you from the industry, if you would at least take a look at these production charts, because it's a good, fast way to take a look at, you know, what fairness really is. And it would help me, I think, as we get on into this discussion. And I appreciate the line of discussion.
Thank you, Representative Hudson. Representative Barr, you had a question.
Yeah. First, I want to describe my credentials. I grew up in Alaska and went to college also, and I minored in economics. And I'm left-handed, therefore I'm a left-handed pseudo type of economist.
Are you a minor in economics?
But I'm wondering, given the assumption that the capitalistic economy, whether the state ought to have any less of a profit motive with regard to our share of the profit from the production of a resource that, first of all, belongs to us, than the industry should have. If we're going to be on a level playing field, maybe we ought to be just as aggressive as them in going after the profits. And with respect to a comment that Representative Furness made with regard to the industry taking all the risk, I guess I'd like to hear some analysis of just where the risk ends and a calculation of what your profits are going to be begins. Because obviously when you look at going out and exploring for oil, you don't just pick a point on the map and go out and drop a well. You do some studies and you determine where your best prospects are, and then based on a calculated risk that you're going to get some return, hopefully you're going to discover oil, you're going to get some return, you go out and drill the well. And a lot of the money that was invested in Alaska was invested after the fields were identified. We knew how much recoverable reserves were. It was based on certain price assumptions. So not all the money was risk. Some of it was just a rock-solid investment plan. And I don't know where that, how much you can calculate of what's been invested over the years in Alaska, how much can be calculated in terms of risk, venture capital, and how much can be accounted for in terms of investment.
Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me, I want to ask one question of Mr. Erickson before we, and we must be getting along here because we do have one more person to testify. Mr. Erickson, a question. You talked about the income tax rates being different for the oil companies in comparison to corporations and other endeavors. Could you please explain that a little more, and why is the oil tax rate or the income tax for oil companies lower than it is for other corporations in the state of Alaska?
If you look in the statute, you'll find that the oil companies' tax rates are the same as the tax rates paid by other companies in Alaska. What you also find, though, is that there's a special system of determining what income is for the oil companies. And it's that difference that gives the oil companies much lower effective tax rates. You see, they pay 12 cents of their income as tax, when 9.4% would in fact be much closer to 50 cents of their income. And they report on their tax returns that they have income in Alaska of about $1.5 billion or so. In fact, their income in Alaska is closer to $3 billion. And it's that or four. And that difference results in the lower effective tax rate. Now, the oil companies will argue that that's the $1.5 billion is, of course, the only thing that should be attributed to Alaska's income, but everybody knows, and it's reflected in the TAP settlement methodology and the numbers that PIW has studied developed, that their income is substantially more than that. This was part of the 1981 legislation. The legislature knew when it adopted the modified apportionment system and abandoned the separate accounting system that was in place before 1981, that it would raise a lot less money. So it's not like it was a surprise to us, although we were surprised at how much less it was going to raise. But that change is the source of the lower percentage of revenue paid in income tax by oil and gas corporations. And it's discrimination in favor of those corporations and against all the other corporations that pay higher tax.
Commissioner Long.
Yeah, on the same subject, Mr. Chairman, the strange way our law works, and it isn't, I don't think we want to single out the oil companies in this regard. The strange way our income tax law works is that if you're operating in Alaska and all your assets there and your operations are there and that's it, that's where you're sited, you'll pay something pretty close to the 9.4% rate if you got a substantial amount of income. If you're located someplace else and you're operating in Alaska, the effective rate's going to be lower. And that's a function of the apportionment system. And that's a separate topic, but it has the effect of substantially reducing the income tax rate, in this case for oil. It does for most other international companies or national companies operating in Alaska, but not necessarily. I mean, it could have an effect where actually they pay a higher rate. That could happen. But the reason is that the formula system of apportioning income to Alaska is based on a formula that may or may not reflect real income. That's the reason. In the state of Alaska. But if you're a company, an Alaska-based company, operating entirely within Alaska, you got no way to portion any of the income out. You're stuck. It's all taxed right here. Now, and, of course, that issue is one of the issues that's being debated in a separate piece of legislation in this legislature.
So I guess to focus the debate here, we've been talking about a rather complex tax structure or policy here, and it seems as though we're trying to focus in on where are we and where have we been, what's the problem with the one that we have, and apparently we must have a problem or we wouldn't have it at the table every year. And so I would just ask, I guess, the industry tomorrow and in further remarks from the administration to help us unravel this bowl of spaghetti and
and try to get it down to a point where we as public decision makers and the public understand just exactly what are the components that we should be considering as far as the overall tax policy that we want to have that would it result in a fair, a reasonable, and appropriate tax policy. I will continue on with questions by the committee. Representative Furness.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, if I could. Representative Navarre asked about within the capitalistic system, how aggressive should one party be? Whereas the private sector is indeed aggressive towards that profitability. Well, let me share with this committee. I believe that the state of Alaska has indeed reflected certain aggression over a period of time. You must consider, we are the ones who developed the law. We are the ones who developed the regulations. I believe it was the state of Alaska that developed the formula that we are currently deliberating over. And yet, in all that aggression, we are still, I understand, some $1 billion short over a period of time. And we're short, although we raised the tax and we changed the tax environment some 11 times during this period of time. So, you know, when you look at that, the state certainly has not been idle over this process. Now, to the degree of risk, tomorrow, perhaps, we should ask the companies, ask the industries, how many dry holes do they drill in comparison to the one that's profitable, or in comparison to the holes that are profitable? Then we can determine the risk. You drill a dry hole, nothing comes up. Nobody hears about it. You drill a profitable one, everybody's standing at the door with their hands out. But I think those are important distinctions to make for the record.
I think that distinction should also include the fact that whatever your cost of doing business, you write that off against the bottom line, which is your net profit. That's my understanding. But anyway, I think we're getting a little farther away from the debate here. I will allow you one more comment, Representative Navarre. If we're going to get back and forth at the table across, otherwise I think we should confine our remarks to the issue before us.
Yeah, I'd be pretty interested in how many dry holes the industry has drilled in Alaska versus how many profit-making holes they've drilled in Alaska. I think there's no question that they've drilled a good number more that have been profit-making. And sometimes we do hear about the dry holes. I remember Muckluck. And with regard to our taxing policy, you know, a couple of years ago when we had this debate and the discussion that Mr. Erickson alluded to with regard to whether or not we had made a deal, that was brought up a couple of years ago, and my policy hasn't changed with respect to whether or not we made a deal. I mean, if we have faith in this system, and sometimes I do, we'll have to assume that in 81, the legislature then did what they thought was in the best interest of Alaska at that point. And there was some disagreement, but I think overall we have to assume that the policymakers then did the best job. Our responsibility as policymakers now is to look at, in terms of what now is in the best public policy interest of the state of Alaska, what should we do now in terms of our statewide policy. And one final comment in terms of drilling and profits and things like that, and the incentive that we give the industry. Mr. Erickson mentioned it also, and I think that it's an important point that we have to drive home in this overall discussion, and that is that it's our resource. And the oil industry is here to extract that resource because they can get a profit. The state of Alaska and the people of the state of Alaska to whom that resource belongs will still be here when the oil is gone, and the oil industry, having no longer any profit motive, will not be. And I think that's important.
So if we make continue now with the presentation of the administration, I believe we have, well, Mr. Erickson, if you have nothing else, I would like to call Chuck Loxton, the petroleum economist of the Department of Revenue, to the table.
Hello, Mr. Lockton. Please state your name for the record and where you come from.
My name is Charles Lockton. I'm a petroleum economist with the Department of Revenue, and it's my pleasure to address the committee, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to go through a couple of things very briefly. Obviously, in the policy discussion which has preceded Brother Erickson and the rest of the people at the Department of Revenue, we've been talking a lot about very philosophical issues. I want to talk about some basic bottom line things which relate directly to the fiscal health of the state and the potential crisis we have in terms of revenue. What you see on the, could I have the first chart there, please? That's right. Under the new bill, there is some bad news for the state treasury, and that bad news is that we're going to receive roughly $25 million less from the smaller fields in Alaska in 1990-91. And in the long term, as you can see, the yellow area from the year, from the current period to the red line being the current, the blue line, the yellow shaded area, we will provide tax relief in the amount of $200 million to the producers of the smaller fields. Let's turn now to the larger fields. This is the good news. And that is, we will, under HB 118, be picking up some substantial revenues from both the Prudhoe Bank Kuparuk field. In the short term, between 1990 and 91, an additional $200 million from Prudhoe Bay and $62 million from Kuparuk for a total of $262 million. Now, in the long-term gain, which is the blue area, this would be, we've run this out through the year 2010, we would be picking up from Prudhoe Bay an additional $2.5 billion and from Kuparuk $391 million. Now let me just mention a couple of things that I think these graphs imply. The first one is, and I didn't talk much about this, but what we've done to estimate the revenues here is assume the world oil price stays roughly between $13 and $20 a barrel in constant dollar terms over the long run. But what that says is, based on our best estimates of the cost of producing oil, is that we will continue to earn revenue from these fields even though the taxes are raised. That is, assuming the price stays within that range, the companies are not going to leave the state, and they will continue to produce Prudhoe Bay and Kuparuk. The bad news is that under this HB 118, we'll actually earn, starting about the year 2020 or 30, less revenue under this bill. Those are my comments, Mr. Chairman. I take questions at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Lockton. Are there any questions by members of the committee? Representative Furness.
Mr. Chairman, I sort of chuckle, but I think you're probably correct. What we've done over time, and I think Erickson alluded to it, that back during the time he was a legislative staffer, and they were looking at, I believe it was chart number 8, and they looked at that to be somewhat the best situation, and only to find later down the road that we had probably made a miscalculation of what we thought was a theoretical kind of misgivings ended up being something of some substance. And I think the most important thing that we need to do now is to do it right. To do it right, and the question is, how do we do it right? How do we set a stable environment when it comes to the taxing policy of this state, and at the same time strike a real balance as to a fair and equitable distribution of that resource and the profits thereof? And so I certainly appreciate what you've said here. In essence, what you're telling us, we need to really do some additional homework and make sure that we don't rush into this and, again, do it right. If not, come a couple of years down the road, we're going to be back at the table discussing this issue again.
Well, actually, what I'm trying to say is that we can pick up about $150 million a year over the next 5 years under this bill with some surety, as long as the price is above $6 a barrel. And I don't know what your odds are the price is going to go below six, but that's for the legislators to evaluate, as you suggest.
I really probably shouldn't say this, but I will risk my role as equitable chairman. I think if we take too much time, though, what is important to understand, and I would ask the remarks tomorrow from the industry to consider this, the resource is exiting our taxing jurisdiction at a rapid rate. And so I think this is also a consideration that I am forced to make as a public policy decision maker. Are there additional comments by the administration? Commissioner.
Chairman, I'd like to thank you and the other members of the committee for the opportunity to review the legislation and its projected effects, and to review, Mr. Erickson did today, some of the fundamental policy issues that we believe need to be considered. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to point out that this particular proposal basically is a revenue proposal. It's a proposal to generate some money, as Mr. Larson has pointed out. We think it will be done in such a way that it will have the beneficial effect in the long run of encouraging development in the state of Alaska. We rarely get that sort of opportunity. But it is a money bill, and it's, as far as I know, it's the only one where practically all the money, whichever amount you realize from it, doesn't come out of the pocket of some Alaskan. I urge the committee to keep that in mind as well.
Thank you, Commissioner. I would like to make the two announcements again before I recess or adjourn this meeting, and those two announcements are that we have passed out questions to all parties involved and would request that you answer those questions. If you're a representative of the industry and you did not get a copy of those questions, either Jay here or Lorene of my staff would be happy to give you them. And if you can, we would like a return of those questions or answers to those questions by Friday, the 17th of February. The second announcement is that we will be offering time on Wednesday for a short, concise summary of your presentations. And we would encourage them from both the administration as well as the oil companies after you make the presentations tomorrow. With that, if the committee members have no further comments, well, let me first see if in fact there's anyone left on the bridge. Is there anyone left on the bridge?
I don't know. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, it's Mike Davis. I'm up here and in a monitoring situation. Thanks for the opportunity to listen in up here.
Well, thank you, and let the record show that Representative Davis has been with us for quite some time, and I appreciate all of the representatives who took time from their busy schedules. We've gone to Fairbanks, that's Representative Davis, Representative Sharp, and Representative Menard in the MATSU to teleconference on this committee meeting. And with that, I would like to adjourn this meeting at 5:14.